cold as a razor blade, as tight as a tourniquet, like the skin on a dying man.
I don't want a piece of the world. I want the whole world.
I make my own rules because it's much easier that way.
Trust me.
Jake, what's going on, brother?
And all sorts of good things are going on.
Lay it on us.
Well, you know, about a year ago, I had a little hot rod, a Cadillac hot rod.
Yeah.
Just gotten it after it being in the shop for over a year while they put a super hot engine in it. Well, I drove it less than 20 miles and it caught on fire.
Oh, my God.
And burned it. So, boom, there went a quick 60,000.
Holy shit.
But today I bought another one. I bought a 1966 Cadillac convertible.
All right.
And it's unbelievable. This car only has 36,000 miles on it.
No way.
Yeah.
Was it like just owned by some old lady or something?
Something.
Dude.
36,000 miles.
That is incredibly rare. What a pickup for you, man.
I'll get you guys some pictures of it, man.
Please do send some pictures. And yeah, we'll get them up on the Snake Pit social media, your social media. It's we've got to see this vehicle.
Oh, yeah. It's really hot. The other thing that's hot is it's getting close to going to Scotland.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to going over there. You know, it's been a long time since I've been to the UK, and I'm hoping this trip will entice others to bring me over because I'd like to spend some more time over there.
Man, how exciting. I've seen a lot of the hype online from your fans talking about how pumped up they are to get to see you over there in the UK. I know that you're going over there with Inside the Ropes, but you're doing a little tour of the UK, right?
Yeah, we'll be going to Manchester and London and Glasgow.
Holy smokes, guys. Keep your eyes on Jake the Snake's social media. Again, it's at Jake Snake DDT on Twitter, on Instagram. It's at Jake the Snake DDT. And on Facebook, it's at Real Jake the Snake. You guys are going to see all kinds of updates there from him on when and where to get your tickets and where you can finally meet the Snake if you're living over there in the UK and been waiting for your chance.
Not only meet the Snake, but meet Mrs. Snake. And Cheryl's going with me. We're going to make a vacation out of this.
I mean, come on, guys. The greatest power couple in the history of professional wrestling, both coming over there to the UK. If you miss this one, I don't know what's going on with you, pal. You better figure out a way to make it there, right, Jake?
You got that right. Here well, I come.
Man, I'm wishing I could go over there. That sounds like it's going to be a hell of a good time. And I know that you're going over there with, like I said, the guys from Inside the Ropes. Kenny McIntosh is going to interview you in his own little impromptu Snake Pit live in front of a crowd. So, brother, it's what an experience they're in for. All right, let's get into these notes, Jake. This week, we're going to talk about 50 years ago, which is insane to think about, and your start in wrestling. This is part of your career where there's really no research to be found online. So I prepared a bunch of questions so we can really dive in on this critical period in your life and get the most comprehensive version of your story. So, Jake, you've mentioned before that when you were in high school, you had considered becoming an architect. And after growing up around wrestling and becoming a fan of a guy like Danny Hodge, was there ever a moment when you were growing up that you thought maybe you'd like to follow in your father's footsteps and get into wrestling?
Absolutely not.
Why is that?
Well, you got to understand, as a kid, I blamed wrestling for keeping my father away from me.
Because
he was never around me. And, you know, I thought, you know, because of wrestling, that's the reason he couldn't see me.
Yeah.
So I hated wrestling. And I was tired of seeing him getting hurt. You know, because he worked us kids to the bone. You know, he really played it up. All the ring injuries he would have, he would play them out at home on us.
So he would come home and really ham it up. He was like kayfabing you guys.
Yeah, for sure. It was brutal.
Why do you think it was important for him to make you believe that wrestling was real?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I never did find out.
Very strange stuff. And I mean, you know, you're not interested at all in becoming a professional wrestler, which is fascinating, as you'd go on to have even greater success than your father in the business. But it makes me wonder, Jake, in high school, were you an athlete?
Yeah, I played football, and baseball was my best sport.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a great clip of you out there. I think it's from 1988. You're playing softball, and you run and catch a fly ball. You remember this?
Oh, yeah, sliding on my ass and water going everywhere.
But you got it. And it was like, holy shit, all right, that was something else. So were you a better hitter or fielder in baseball in high school?
Fielder.
Now, what about football? What position were you playing?
I played tight end, defensive end.
A big, tall target like you as a tight end, I'm sure that you had some success there.
No, never caught a ball.
No shit.
Never caught one.
All right, so baseball was the sport.
Yep.
Now, what do you remember about arriving at the decision that you wanted to be a wrestler?
Well, I went down to see my father in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and to tell him I'd graduated from high school,
mm-hmm.
college. So I went down to see him, and, you know, I told him I'd graduated, and he's like, well, I'm happy you did that, you know, and just kind of blew me off. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I'm going to go to college, you know, and become an architect. And he's like, well, I hope you don't need anything from me because I don't have anything to give you.
Oh, man.
I'm like, wow. Thanks for the help, Dad.
Yeah.
You know, I was the first kid in my family to ever graduate from high school.
Were you really?
Yeah. Yeah. And did so with great grades. So I was hurt. I was angry. And we went to a wrestling show. And youth, ignorance, and alcohol got involved.
Oh, boy.
After about 6 or 7 beers, it came to my mind that if I wanted my dad to be proud of me, I needed to go get in the ring and beat up somebody.
Okay.
You know, that just made all the sense in the world to me. And I wasn't afraid of nothing. So I went up to the ringside and I beat on the mat and I challenged this guy named Billy Bad Boy Hines. And got in the ring with him, and he stretched the shit out of me. He had me crying. He had me pissing on myself. You know, I'm lucky he knew who I was, because he could have hurt me really bad.
Yeah.
But he stretched the hell out of me for about 15 minutes, man. You know, he had me crying, you know, crying for mama and everything, man. Oh, it was horrible. To the point that I had to crawl out of the ring. I couldn't get up. I crawled back to the locker room, and my father was standing there, and he looked down at me and he goes, I'm ashamed of you. You're gutless and you'll never amount to anything.
Mm.
Wow. That was hard to take.
Fuck yeah.
And I remember that night laying in bed, man. And so upset, so angry. And that's when I made the decision I was going to be a wrestler. That I was going to be a wrestler that was better than my father. No matter the size difference, because, you know, he was 7 foot and weighed 425 pounds.
Yeah, huge guy.
And but I made up my mind that no matter what, I don't care what I had to do. If it was cheating, okay, I'll do it. If it was stealing, okay, I'll do it. I made a deal with the devil that night, man. And after that, the next day, I started trying to see how I could get involved. The father didn't want me to be a wrestler.
So when you came to your father and told him this afterwards, like, Dad, I'm going to be a wrestler, he told you, nope, not going to help you?
Yeah, he said, I'm not going to help you wrestle. You can't do it. So I said, well, how about refereeing? And he made me a referee.
So you're stepping into a ref role without doing any training?
Yeah.
Okay. So now that's interesting because it's, you know, ordinarily the refs, at least in modern day, they have to train right alongside the wrestlers so that they can kind of see what it's like and understand everything. So how did you learn how to ref?
Trial and error. I remember a guy by the name of Luke Brown, who's my dad's tag team partner for a long time. He picked me up in Baton Rouge, and we had to go to Alexandria, Louisiana, which is about 100 miles. And on the way, I'm trying to find out how to referee.
Holy shit.
You gotta, I thought it was a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to talk to him about it, and he's just blowing me off. He's, oh, don't worry about it. We'll tell you what you need to know. Like, well, what do I do if a guy just won't let go of him? He says, well, you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you get to 5, you disqualify him. Okay. I can do that. What if he's choking him? Same thing. Oh, okay. So we keep driving, and we get about 20 miles out, and he just looks at me, and he goes, Ken, are you Smizart? And I want to do what? He said, are you smart? I said, fucking right I'm smart, man. I just graduated from high school. And he just looked at me and laughed. And he said, kayfabe. I went, what? He said, oh, my God. He looked at me and he goes, I got some news for you. Wrestling's fake. And, man, my fucking world just crumbled. I couldn't believe it. All this time, I thought it was real.
Holy shit.
Oh, my God. And in less than 2 hours, I'm going to be in the ring refereeing. And, you know, I was really, really, really upset, man. Because I realized my father had been fucking with me ever since I was a little kid. You know? And I thought it was pretty shitty.
And you have to learn it from, not even from him, but from his tag team partner.
Yeah.
What was the guy's name again?
Luke Brown.
Okay. So you're trying to be a wrestler, but you're starting out as a referee. Are you picking up, like, is this guy also trying to school you, like, beforehand? Are you stepping into the ring and taking bumps or doing anything like that?
Nope. I guess about 2 months into it, a couple of guys decided they were going to help me, so they took me and made me hit the ropes for an hour straight.
Holy shit.
Which fucking nearly crippled me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't even raise my arm, man. I couldn't fucking do anything. I'm trying to count gals out, and I'm like, one, oh, God, almighty, two, holy shit, fuck, no, three. Bad, man. But I stayed doing that for about 9 months, and Cowboy Bill Watts came back to Louisiana and decided I didn't need to be a referee. They didn't want a referee that's taller and bigger than some of the wrestlers.
Mm.
So he fired me. So from there, I went to Florida. Florida Championship Wrestling, where I would referee and start having a few matches.
Okay, got to hit the pause button on the podcast real quick to talk to you guys about Modern Mania Wrestling GM. Have you guys heard about this mobile game yet? It's a pro wrestling general manager game for your phone or tablet. And this game is seriously a hidden gem, especially if you've always wanted to act as a GM or a booker inside of a wrestling organization. This will scratch that itch for you, brother. Great looking characters, a really slick interface, easy to play in short bursts, or if you want to sit down for a long session, it's good for that too. It's a simple premise. Collect cards for wrestlers, match types, venues, and skits. Use these cards to book wrestling shows. The better the shows you book, the more in-game cash you'll earn to collect more cards. Team up the right wrestlers and you'll unlock their tag team card. Match certain wrestlers up against each other and you'll unlock their feud card. Manage your roster, create factions, compete or control other promotions inside the game universe. It is seriously an absolute blast. And by the way, guys, it's free to play, and the developers are constantly updating the game with new characters and features. To get the game, search for Modern Mania Wrestling GM in the App Store or Google Play Store. Once you've played through the tutorial, head to the settings screen, and on the bottom, you'll see a code button. There you can enter our promo code HEAT, H-E-A-T, to get a bunch of free wrestlers and game cash. Wrestling fans, do yourselves a favor. Check this game out. Again, it's Modern Mania Wrestling GM. I'm telling you, it's a blast, and I know that you guys are going to love playing it.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
So you're leaving this territory where your father had established a name and you were very, very comfortable. And now you're like, you're out on your own. Like, you, I assume you're not going to Florida with anybody, right? You're just going.
What?
How did you come by that opportunity? Did one of the guys kind of smarten you up that they needed help down there?
I just called.
Okay.
Called and told them who I was. And that got me in.
So telling them that you're Grizzly Smith's son kind of opened the door a little bit.
Right.
So when you would become a referee, what did you think about getting out in front of that big live crowd? Like, what was that experience like for you for the first time?
Same, man. It was crazy. You know, to have that much power, to have that much, have all the focus on you. You know, which is the last thing you want for Rita to do is to have to focus on him. Mm-hmm. You want it on the table. But dealing with the crowds is another thing, because the crowds back then were different, man. They'd fucking cut you. They would fuck you up, man. So I was pretty much a baby face referee.
Now, when you make mistakes, which obviously, I mean, you're going into this thinking it's a fucking shoot, so you're going to make mistakes. When you would make mistakes, are the crowds getting on you? Are the wrestlers getting on you? What was that like?
Oh, yeah, the wrestlers chewed my ass, man, because I'd fuck up shit. You know, and they were fair about it, but they were pretty brutal about it, too, man. It's not the right way to learn to do anything, you know?
No.
It was the stupidest thing I've ever done was trying to get started that way. Because I didn't know how to headlock you or fucking arm drag you or nothing. You know, I guarantee I knew a hell of a lot less than you know already in the little bit that you've done.
And I don't know a ton, but yeah, like even hearing that, like knowing that you're stepping into the ring as a referee, now that I have the perspective of training as a wrestler, it's, dude, that is incredibly daunting.
Yeah, it was pretty rough, man. A lot of lonely nights thinking about what the fuck am I doing? But I couldn't quit, man. I wasn't going to quit no matter what.
So you had considered quitting on a few, I'm sure, like when you're getting back and your lats are all fucked up from hitting the ropes and you're tired and guys are chewing you out. Like, you probably thought of quitting many times.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, I did.
You know, at this time, for added perspective for everybody, you're 19 or 20 years old and you're surrounded by a bunch of grown men who are trying to make a living to put food on their table and pay their bills. And like, you are just wet behind the ears, no real knowledge. What can you tell us about your early experiences in that environment, like around, like, you know, some pretty gruff guys? Was everybody good to you for the most part?
For the most part, everybody was pretty good, except for the people that my father had heat with. They were real assholes.
Okay.
You know, I had a couple of them rough me up in the ring pretty good.
Because they didn't like your old man and they're taking liberties with you?
Right.
Do you remember any of the names of these guys?
There was a handful of them, and, you know, I never did know why it happened, but it doesn't really matter because it shouldn't have happened.
I meant to ask you this earlier. That guy that stretched you on that first night when you tried to climb into a ring, did you ever cross paths with him again?
I wrestled him again.
Did you really?
Yeah, a few years later.
And how did that go that time?
Just about the same.
He was still a pretty rough customer.
Yes, he was.
Do you know whatever became of the guy?
He faded off into the sunset.
Well, fuck that guy beating up a young kid like you. Jesus.
I probably needed it.
Well, it's, I guess it did show you that it's, you know, the business isn't easy and certainly isn't for anybody who's not tough. Was anybody willing to take, when you make this move to Florida, again, an unknown territory, your dad is not really there. He's not there at all to help you out. Did anybody take you under their wing and teach you some stuff?
Yeah, a couple of guys did. One was, Hiro Matsuda.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I trained a little bit with him. And then he let me go with, a young Japanese boy that was over here learning named Mitsu Hata.
Mm.
And he took me to the ring and showed me how to take bumps.
First time you took a bump, what did you think?
What the fuck am I doing?
Yeah. I thought the same thing the first time I took one.
Yeah, because, you know, I did the same thing that you did. I didn't attack it. You got to attack that ring.
Guys, just so our listeners know, you know, it was such a cool thing. And something that I talked to the trainers about after you talked to me about it was whenever I first went, it was very jarring on my body to take bumps where I was like, I felt it like a shockwave all the way through my body. I'm like, there's no way I can do this every fucking time. Like it's killing me. And so I talked to Jake afterwards and he was like, I know it doesn't make sense, but throw yourself at the mat harder. And why is that again, Jake?
Because you got to attack it. If you don't kill it, it's going to kill you.
That's exactly it. And the way that you put it on the phone with me was like, if one guy is running at a guy who's standing still and plows into him, the guy who's standing still is going to feel it the worse. But if two guys are coming at each other hard, it kind of offset each other. And that's essentially what happens, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Man, it's awesome. And the trainers at the school were like, damn, he's right. So pretty awesome stuff. Now, I know that at the time, drug use was really big in the world of wrestling, not just to cope with pain, but also to come down from the high of being in front of a live crowd. Yeah. What was your earliest memory of seeing drugs being used by a wrestler?
Smoking pot.
Okay.
I wasn't around the main event guys that could afford to do other things.
Okay, so you weren't... Pot
and beer.
So you weren't seeing guys taking somas or anything like that yet?
No. It was mostly beer and that's it. Maybe a little pot. Drugs weren't used the way they got to be in the 80s. You know, the drug use wasn't there in the 60s and 70s.
So the worst it ever got to was pot during those days.
Yeah.
At what point did you feel like you were ready to have a match in front of a live crowd? Like how much longer after you got to Florida as a ref did it take?
Oh, I started having matches in front of live crowds in Florida, but I was really, really bad.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, I stunk the house up. You know, I just didn't get it. I wasn't getting it. And so after about 6 months, they had to let me go.
So they didn't even keep you on as a referee?
No, I'd done my time.
So you're green as grass. You've got very little experience, maybe 6 months or so. What was the next move after Florida let you go?
After Florida let me go, I went to Mobile, Alabama. I went to Memphis, Tennessee. I went to Nashville, Tennessee. Each place doing about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
To learn. Then I went to Kansas City. And in Kansas City, I got with Buck Robley.
Okay.
And Buck probably had more to do with me becoming a wrestling star than anybody.
No shit.
Yeah.
What did you learn from Buck?
How to smoke pot.
Well, that's going to be a critical step for sure.
Yeah, it was, man. He just talked to me and explained shit to me and got in my head, you know, and an opportunity come for me to go from Kansas City, where I was on first match, to go to Vancouver, Canada, and have the opportunity to wind up in the main event.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So I was just starting to catch on. And when I went to Vancouver, it's like somebody threw gasoline on me, man, and lit me up, because I started learning shit right and left. I'd finally got it. So I wound up going from the first match to the main event. And I was off and running then. I went from there to Japan. Spent 12 weeks in Japan. Then I went from there to Calgary to Stu Hart. So I worked for the Harts.
Okay, beach babes, let's hit the pause button. Are you ready to soak up those summer vibes and unveil your ultimate beach bod? Well, you're in luck, pal, because our friends over at Manscaped have got you covered from head to toe with the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra. This ultimate all-in-one grooming kit is set to have you looking and feeling your best in the summer sun. Trust Manscaped and unlock the confidence you need to turn heads this season. Join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our code SNAKEPIT. Let's make this summer your smoothest one yet. Guys, let me say, now that I'm becoming a wrestler, I'm beginning to really, really understand the value of Manscaped and the service that they offer. Obviously, I've got to get rid of all that body hair. And let me tell you, by the time I'm done, it looks like a couple Chewbacca's got into a fist fight in my bathroom. But thanks to Manscaped, that entire process has been made very easy. And it can be easy for you too. You've got to try this out. Embrace your summer bod goals with their all-inclusive Performance Package 5.0, perfect for those aiming for that crisp, clean, and confident look. The updated Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra Groin and Body Hair Trimmer got a summer makeover. It's waterproof, designed for splashy pool parties and beach hangouts. Keep your ears and nose as tidy as your hedges next door with our Weed Whacker 2.0 Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer. Pesky hair, get out of here! Post-trim care never felt so good with the Crop Soother Ball Aftershave Lotion. Say goodbye to the painful chafing and say hello to all-day comfort. For those sunny beach days, don't leave home without the Crop Preserver Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant. Let the sun see you shine, not sweat. Their Magic Matte Disposable Shaving Mats got your back and front and everything else that needs grooming. It's like having a magician in your bathroom. Surprise! Your purchase comes with free Boxers 2.0 Midnight Bravo. Comfort and style that fit like a dream. Guys, if you haven't tried Manscaped yet, what are you doing? You've heard of these promo codes, you've heard about how great the product is, and you know you got to get your body looking right. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code SNAKEPIT at manscaped.com.
That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code SNAKEPIT at manscaped.com. The summer sun is here to stay, so trust Manscaped to keep your pubes at bay.
So that covers a period. If you started in 74, then that covers a period of about 5 years before you made it to the Hearts territory. And that's the area where you started to, that was the first time you were on TV wrestling, right?
No, I was on TV in Vancouver also.
Oh, okay. Just like local television there.
Yeah.
When you're in Vancouver, I had it in my research here that Moose Murawski was a guy who may have trained you up.
Yeah. Moose took me under his wing and we started wrestling each other and we wound up being in a cage match in a sold out house in Vancouver.
Main event.
Yeah.
How far into your career were, like, how many months or whatever in were you by the time you made it to Vancouver? Do you remember?
Probably about 3.5 years.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, when you were with Buck Robley, you were in the Kansas City territory for a bit learning under him, right?
Yeah, about 7 months.
Okay. And how long did you end up in Vancouver in total?
About 8 months.
Okay. And after that, you felt like, okay, you were confident in your in-ring abilities.
Yeah, I was confident I could go anywhere and wrestle.
What do you remember about selecting your ring gear and getting boots? There's a pretty great photo of you out there in a blue singlet, long blue tights and like black boots, which is a very different look than the one you'd grow accustomed to.
I had a hard time figuring out what I wanted to wear, man. Shit didn't look right on me. But I finally wound up going with the short tights.
Which was a pretty good look. That's the look you'd have in Mid-Atlantic and elsewhere. And I thought it kind of worked. But you said eventually you moved to the karate pants because you didn't like your legs.
Yeah, skinny legs.
We're almost done. Just a few more questions. And we're going to have to continue this story because to me, this is fascinating. And it's stuff I feel like in doing research, I've learned so much about you and your career. I can speak knowledgeably on where you were. But this is such a blank spot for me. So I find it really fascinating. Your first match in front of a crowd would have come during your time in Florida. And do you recall who your first opponent was?
No, I don't.
Okay. Sure. Looking back through research, I saw that you did wrestle Dutch Mantel really early on. He was not your first match, though?
No. Not even close.
Oh, okay. Dutch, was he an experienced veteran at that point, or was it kind of the blind leading the blind by the time you met him?
He was a veteran.
Oh, okay. Now, was he helpful at all or not so much?
Not so much.
Okay. And look, I feel like Buck Robley taking the step and saying, hey, I'm going to help you. First, he teaches you how to smoke pot, which is great. But then taking the step and figuring out how to help you. Like, again, this business was very competitive. And if you train a guy in this era, you're essentially possibly training your replacement. So who's going to be willing to do that shit?
Exactly.
So Buck, hell of a man for doing that. Good on him for being just a good shit and helping you. Looking back on it, would you say that that period of time established you as the man that you would become eventually on the big screen in the WWF, or was that stuff that you started to learn further on down the road?
Further on down the road.
Okay, so it just set a base essentially at this time of just the fundamental skills.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, when you jumped into wrestling, did you have a shoot job or did you leave the shoot job behind?
I left the shoot job behind.
So you're in it with both feet, no fucking safety net. If you fail, you're broke.
That's it.
Dude, scary.
Yeah, it would get scarier because I would wind up breaking my arm in Louisiana. And I was off for 8 months.
Was this before you went to Vancouver?
No, this was after I went to Vancouver.
So what happened there? How'd you break your arm?
I was wrestling Ernie Ladd, and somehow we broke it.
So there's not exactly like any unemployment pay or anything that you can collect when it comes to pro wrestling. You're an independent contractor just coming into the territory on handshake arrangements. How did you take care of yourself with a broken arm for 8 months?
I went back to Texas and worked on a dairy farm.
No shit.
Yeah.
And that whole time, I'm sure you're just itching to get back into a wrestling ring.
Man, I couldn't wait to get back.
Did you have a spot in Louisiana waiting for you, or did you have to find your way somewhere else?
I had a spot. It wasn't waiting for me, but it just happened to work out.
Did you know early on when you started that becoming a wrestler meant that you were going to be living a life out of essentially a suitcase?
Yeah, I saw that. I'd seen that from my father.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that.
So he was never home. So you were like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be gone all the time. But one little known fact, which I'm not sure if our listeners are aware of, was that you were also married right out of high school in 1974. Yeah. And so, I mean, you're starting really young as the man of a household and you've got a young wife at the time. What did your wife think of the prospect of you? Okay, we just got married and now I'm gone all the time.
She put up with it, man. You know, I was out there making the money that fed us, that took care of us. And she was real good about it. She was never around wrestling. And that was a good thing.
That is what they always say. Keep your wife out of wrestling.
Yeah.
Man, this was a really fun episode, Jake. I would like to continue the conversation down the road. I've got to see if I can find some research on your time in Vancouver because I'd love to do a deep dive on that. Later this year, we are going to be covering your time in Calgary because that was 45 years ago this year that you spent time in Stu Hart's territory and had one of the very first ladder matches ever. So we will be talking about that here coming up. But yeah, that's going to wrap us up for this. Oh, hell yeah. You and young JYD. And if I remember correctly, you and JYD left the territory together to go start in Bill Watts Mid-South.
Yeah, we both went to Louisiana.
Look out for that one this summer, guys, because that's going to be the 45-year anniversary of that ladder match. So that's when we're doing the episode. But Jake, I appreciate you answering all the questions this week. This was a really cool episode.
All right, bro. Thank you.
All right, guys, just want to remind you all before we go that if you're looking to attract that 25 to 54-year-old male demographic to your product or service, you've got to hit advertisewithsnake.com. Jake is a legend. He's still on TV. Just got re-signed by AEW. He's still out there meeting and talking to fans all the time. He was just out at the 80s wrestling con out there in Jersey, shaking hands and meeting fans. And you can get him to put over your stuff to that demographic. If you want some evidence that it works, just listen to the show, gang. We are always advertising for the same businesses because they know that what we do here on the Snake Pit works. Head to advertisewithsnake.com. Get teamed up with the Hall of Famer, Jake the Snake Roberts. JakeTheSnakeShop.com has got all kinds of great collectibles straight from the man himself. Mother's Day and Father's Day are both coming fast. And if you're like me, you never have a damn clue what to get for anybody. Well, if your mom or dad is a wrestling fan, you cannot go wrong with a gift straight from the master of the DDT. Seriously, check it out. He's got some great merch on the site, and there is more to come. Go right now to JakeTheSnakeShop.com. Hey, speaking of Mother's and Father's Day, why not get them a personal message from Jake the Snake Roberts? You want to talk about a cool, unique gift that they'll cherish forever? This is it, brother. Check out this recent review from Reed. Jake, you should raise your price. Your mic skills are still perfection, and you really get it regarding what we want from Cameo. You've risen to the top among your elite group of peers once again. Guys, forget the flowers. Forget the greeting cards, cologne, tie, or whatever lame gift you were going to get. Order a Cameo today at cameo.com/JakeSnake. Check us out on YouTube. It's youtube.com/@SnakePitPod. We've got short clips from the show, some highlights, and some exclusive content. We've got another bonus episode coming up there on YouTube, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And there's a lot of other exclusive content available there. So if you love what we're doing here on the show, you've got to go over to that page, get subscribed, hit the notifications bell, and be up to date on all things Jake the Snake Roberts and the Snake Pit. Don't miss it, guys. Again, it's youtube.com/@SnakePitPod. Speaking of YouTube, I've got to give a quick reminder that if you guys like what Jake and I do here on the Snake Pit, you've got to check out my other podcasts. First, Ted DiBiase and I have a podcast called Everybody's Got a Pod, and the Million Dollar Man is telling some unbelievable stories each week after a career spanning nearly 50 years in wrestling. You can listen to it on all podcast platforms, but I strongly recommend that you follow us on YouTube because not only do we have exclusive clips from Ted there, but we also have a YouTube exclusive podcast with Hacksaw Jim Duggan that exists only on the Everybody's Got a Pod YouTube page. The show is called The Hacksaw Hour, and Jim is such a character and a natural podcaster. I know you guys are going to love it. And that's not all. Jim is also providing videos of his day-to-day activities, and we have another one coming up to the channel very soon surrounding Jim's big trip north of the border to British Columbia recently. Seriously, go and check it out and get subscribed right now at youtube.com/@everybodysgotapod. If you've enjoyed The Snake Pit, please like, subscribe, and leave us a five-star review on all platforms. That does Jake and I a huge favor, only takes you a couple of seconds, and makes a big difference for us. You can catch Jake on X at JakeSnakeDDT, on Instagram at JakeTheSnakeDDT, and on Facebook at RealJakeTheSnake. You can follow me at MarcusPDAngelo on X, and you can follow the podcast at SnakePitPod on all social media platforms. Man, what a blast looking back to a part of Jake's career that never gets discussed. And again, there's no research available on it, so I had to just kind of shoot from the hip and ask Jake questions. So you guys are getting the story straight from the man himself. We'll have more stories for you next week, and we can't wait to bring them to you right here on The Snake Pit.